The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
And the American Theater Wing's Tony goes to...
And the Tony Award goes to...
And Tony goes to...
Dear Evan Hansen.
Memphis.
Yes. Avenue Q.
In the Heights.
Hamilton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Next Best Theater. I'm your host, Michael Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nicole Ackman.
Hi, everybody.
Dan Bayer.
Hello.
AC Lee Clark.
Hello.
Cody Derricks.
Hi.
And Lauren LaMagna.
Hello, hello.
Happy Tony season, everyone.
Happy spooky Tony season.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
Wait a second. What are you talking about spooky? Doesn't it feel like the Tonys with summer just around the corner and all this fun? Wait a second. Wait a second. That would be in a normal year. And of course, this is anything but a normal year. We didn't even make Tony predictions this year. That's how strange this year is. We are recording this episode on October 15th. So just as Cody said, spooky season. And on this afternoon, the nominations for the 74th Annual Tony Awards have just been announced. And we had no idea what categories were going to be honored this year or how many nominees would even be included in those nominations.
We don't know when the ceremony is.
Yeah.
We're just sort of, you know, being very flexible here and going along with the flow. And, you know, they said James Monroe Oglethorpe was going to announce the nominations. I'm like, okay, I like him. I'll see what he's up to. And he read off a whole bunch of names, which was unexpected to me. I thought we were going to hear like four or five names and move on. But this is a real Tony's thing that's happening at some point, somewhere in time. Who knows? But yes, they were just sort of sprung upon us. So staying true to that very form, your Next Best Theater team is going to have a very casual conversation about our thoughts on these Tony nominations and what we have to look forward to ahead. So without further ado, let's get around to saying what we each thought on a broad level here, and then we could dive into some specific categories and thoughts if needed afterward. Sound good?
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's do it.
I'm going to mix up our usual order tonight because who wants to stick with that same old structure? And I'm going to start by asking Lauren, what did you think about the Tony nominations?
They happened. It's still hard and weird to wrap my mind around the first half of the theater season. It was a good first half. I mean, but that's how I'm describing it, because we did have, you know, a whole second wave of the season to see, and it just didn't happen, obviously, due to Corona. But I'm glad that they're happening. I'm glad that they're here. But it's still weird seeing, you know, the same like 3 to 5 plays be nominated, because that's all that's there. But it's still good that they're being honored. But yeah, it's a weird feeling for me. It's weird.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird season, and I think everything we've seen today just magnifies that. Casey, what did you think about the Tony nominations?
Like Lauren, I'm happy that they're happening. I don't really have strong opinions on any of these shows, but funny enough, all the musicals, I know most of the music from them. So I'm excited to see whatever kind of performance aspect they bring to it. Probably something like what happened with the Sondheim concert, probably a lot of individual solos and things from home working their way around it. I'm looking forward to that. As far as the nominations, I mean, there's definitely some big things that we're all going to talk about, but as a whole, I'm happy that they're happening and I'm looking forward to all that.
Terrific. Nicole, what were your thoughts?
So I do just want to say first that I thought that James Monroe Oglethorpe announcing these was delightful. He said all the names right, seemingly, which is better than most years. I thought that was a really nice thing for them to do, and it was, you know, nicely put together. I'm excited to see what they end up doing for the actual show. I am a little bit weirded out by the fact that we still don't have a date. That feels very strange to me, but I wasn't thrilled with what they did in that, to me, it makes no sense that they didn't just combine categories instead of nominating the same things over and over and over, but I'm sure we will talk more about that later.
All right, Cody Monster 91, what did you think?
Oh, that's my full legal name. Hello. yeah, I was watching these nominations kind of go by, and I was like, okay, there's going to be some weirdness up ahead. There's going to be like a reduction of a category or combination. And nope, we're really just treating this like it was a normal season where we only had three musicals open. Okay, cool. Got it. It is extremely weird to me that nine of the musical categories have the same three nominees just by virtue of them being the only three musicals out of the four eligible that they chose to give nominations to. The play category is obviously a little bit more varied and have more variety because they tend to open plays sometimes early in the season, then close them or whatever. That's typical of any season. But yeah, the weirdness really lies in the musical categories. And I'm kind of surprised we're just doing it the way we're doing it. It's a weird old list. But, you know, I love the Tonys. I love musicals. Obviously, I love Broadway. I'm excited to see it. I don't really have any allegiances to the shows that were nominated. It's kind of interesting that there's no clear, like, runaway, like, there's no Hamilton this year, you know? Like, there's no show that, like, got, like, raised across the board. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm talking about musicals mostly here just because they're the more accessible thing you can, like, you know, participate in when you're not in New York City. But yeah, I mean, I love the Tonys, but this is weird.
Yeah, definitely strange times. And how about you, Dancing Dan?
Well, I'm of two minds about, I'm very happy that the Tonys are happening. And I'm very glad that, you know, the work that did happen this year is being honored, but at the same time, it kind of feels like not all of the work that went on this year is actually being honored. Even the play categories, it seems to be the same couple shows in every category. And it is kind of weird, some of the productions that get to call themselves Tony nominees and some of the people that get to call themselves Tony nominees, because in any normal season we would not be seeing that. And some of them is, that's great. And some of them I'm like, oh, that, well, good for you. but on the whole, like, I'm just so happy to have theater on the forefront of my mind again, and to be reminded of some of the great productions I did see before the world went to hell.
Yeah, definitely. And just to talk about my own thoughts here, when I was listening to the nominations, I actually forgot they were happening at noon and I was driving. So I had a James Monroe Iglehart coming out of the speakers around my car, which was actually very nice. I would do it again. You know, maybe turn on Aladdin or something one day. But listening to these nominations, I wasn't able to like sit and process everything until I got home later on. But, you know, listening to everything that he was saying, I heard some names pop up there like John Benjamin Hickey, Sean Alan Krill, Lauren Patton, Elizabeth Stanley, people who have really been in the weeds for a while now. So seeing them recognized in this abnormal season, I think they're inspired nominees. And that Tony nomination is something you have for your entire career. So knowing that they are now Tony nominees, they are in the club, they get to say that they were in Tony nominated productions and, you know, made that mark. It's a really nice thing to see. As for having these full nominations many months after Broadway closed, look, I like consistency. In 50 years, when I'm 75 years old and looking back on the 2020 Tonys and Tonys of years past, I want to say, oh, wow, they actually had nominees that year. It doesn't look like a gap. And even though there wasn't Broadway as we know it, it still looks like something was happening. And I hate, you know, inconsistencies just in general. So this was nice to see just from that standpoint. Having some sense of structure in these otherwise turbulent times just feels right to me. And even though there's nothing normal about these times, it was just a nice reminder of how things were and could be again one day. And it was just nice to see that we're filling in rather than leaving a bunch of gaps.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad we're doing something because shows did open this year. It doesn't make sense not to reward them just because of, you know, things outside of their circumstances. I feel the same way about the Oscars. But yeah, the weirdness comes from kind of just the seeming ignoring of the unusual circumstances by the nominating committee. But I mean, yeah, all these people are Tony nominees. That doesn't change based on what's going on in the world.
Yeah, and just, you know, having them there, like we said, for years and years to come, even if they don't win, and many of them won't, obviously, because they're nominees and there's usually only one winner, even though there are ties every once in a while. having them there as Tony nominees for the rest of their career, that's a nice mark to have when Broadway reopens and you could say, oh, I was Tony nominated. You know, that gives me some clout to be in the show now.
At the same time, I'm happy for the individuals, but the fact that Moulin Rouge will forever be a show that has 14 Tony nominations and Jagged Little Pill has 15, making them like some of the highest nominated musicals, does feel so strange to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the Oscars, Doolittle's about to tie Lord of the Rings for nominations this year. So it's just a weird time for...
Don't even joke about that, Michael.
It's a weird time for, you know, record-breaking nominees, but...
No, such... yeah. I'm seeing it as asterisks, really, when we say the numbers and we say Tony nominee. Yes, it is good that they are all nominated and they're all very talented people. But I always... I have to think, you know, in, you know, that alternative universe, when if all of those other shows open... Would they have been in competition? Would they have had a chance? Would they actually have made it into that five or into that slot? So I do put an asterisk next to them because, you know, there's no way that Moulin Rouge would get all of those nominations if every other musical that was supposed to open did open. And then Tony, yeah, so that wouldn't have happened. So I'm putting the asterisk there. So yeah, it technically is Tony nominated, but like,
but is it really?
Was it really Tony nominated? Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that stuck out to me as I was driving around listening to these was the inclusion of something like Seawall and A Life. This, they were two one-acts presented together in summer 2019. And that's something that had we had a normal season with Company and Carolina Change and everything else that would come along. I don't think we would have seen that in a larger season. But since this was condensed...
You do know those are musicals and
no, I know. I'm just saying,
play,
yeah,
right? They're not really They wouldn't have been competing for nominations together.
The point was that there would have been more shows, whether they're plays or musicals, and that is a show that I think would have gotten lost around all the other noise in there. You know, if you want to play Virginia Woolf or something like that, or mm-hmm. Take Me Out, whatever was there. So you know, to have Seawall and A Life show up and not just get like nominations for Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Sturridge, but end up in a best play itself. Like that was a significant thing for me. What else was there?
Absolutely. That was a very small production, even though it had big names in the cast, and it was nice to see it rewarded since I'd heard good things about it. It was nice to see it rewarded with these nominations. Some of the other nominations, I just love like when a category is just like half the cast of Jagged Little Pill.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Which of course, like, you know, makes you start wondering like, well, if this was a normal season, which one of them would get in?
Right.
Right. But good for all of them. And I hope that they, you know, get to put it on their resumes and that their quotes can go up.
And I am personally thrilled because we do have a Elon alumni nominee this year, Daniel J. Watts, for Tina, the Tina Turner musical. So as an Elon alum myself, I have to be excited about that. There are some people in this that I'm very, like, I was thrilled to see Derek Klina get a nomination. There are some people that I was very excited to see that we can call them a Tony nominee. I feel like there's a weird dichotomy in my mind right now where I'm willing to call all of the individual people nominated, like, oh, Tony nominee. But in my mind, I'm like, no, Moulin Rouge doesn't have 14 real Tony nominations.
Yeah, and among all the weirdness with, like, you know, what was eligible, there is some fun inclusions, stuff that normally probably wouldn't get recognized. Things like the revival of Frankie and Johnny that opened a year and a half ago gets two nominations that probably I can... almost say certainly wouldn't have happened in a regular year.
The show that I saw while I still lived in New York City.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, it's so weird to me. I'm like, wait, I saw that. Like, how is that real? And Audra was fantastic. I will say, like, it is a good Tony season because Audra McDonald is nominated. Like,
I mean, that alone makes it a real organization. I mean, a real awards ceremony year, you know.
Yes, and a little fun fact about her. So this is her 9th Tony nomination.
A queen.
The record is 10, which is a tie between Julie Harris and Cheetah Rivera. Mm-hmm. So Audra has, you know, many years left, hopefully, knock on wood, to surpass that and, you know, turn into the real Meryl Streep of Broadway. I know she already has the record for most wins. She has 6 Tony wins, which is wonderful. But, you know, let's keep going. Let's see what she can do in terms of nomination tallies. Why not?
Let's get her a 7th.
I mean, she's gonna blow past that record.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
It's just going to happen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.
But I want to take a moment to celebrate and also shed a tear for my favorite category this year. Best original score.
Oh, all right, I need to take some calming breaths.
Because I think if there was an argument for any category that maybe shouldn't have been a thing this year, it's this one. Seeing as how it, you know, technically really is for the best score of a musical, even though plays sometimes get nominated to fill it out. But there's not a single musical there, because every musical that opened that the Tonys decided to look at this year was a jukebox musical. And that kind of says, maybe it says something, maybe it doesn't say something about the state of original musicals on Broadway right now.
I also think it's important to recognize that there was an eligible show for this category.
I'm going to give you the floor on that one, Nicole.
I've mentioned on the podcast before, I saw Percy Jackson, or the Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, whenever it was on national tour and it came to New York. It's not the Tony, like, demographic type of show, but it is a really beautiful show in terms of how many people it's brought into musical theater. Like, whenever I was there, I sat next to 2 teenage girls who told me they'd never seen a show before, but because they loved Percy Jackson, they had come to see it. And at the end, they were so excited and they were talking about, like, oh, well, maybe we should go see this other show. And I thought that was really lovely. And it's also a really loving adaptation of a novel. And the cast, most of whom have been with it since it was off Broadway, then it went on tour, and then it went to Broadway briefly, you know, have really stuck with the show, and it's really a labor of love. And it is also the only original score of this past year. And I think it's a real shame if, you know, is it the best score of all time? No. It actually does have a handful of songs in it that, like, it has one song that would probably make my top 25 musical theater songs of all time list, sung fantastically by Chris McCarroll, but I'll talk about that later. And I think it's a real shame that they didn't nominate it here, especially considering, you know, last year, like, Be More Chill got a score nomination.
I was just going to say, yeah.
And it's better than that. So I just think this category would also make more sense if you had one musical and then some plays. But to just nominate 5 plays honestly just feels kind of petty to me, which a lot of the snubbing of the Lightning Thief feels petty to me. And that's kind of why, frankly, it's hard to bring myself to care this year just because of that.
It's one of those things where, like, I was like, listening or looking at the nominations afterward, because I unfortunately had a work meeting while they were being announced. So I was very sad to not be able to watch live. But when I looked at who was nominated after, I was like, did people just not know that it was eligible? Like, did they it fall under the special event banner and thus wasn't eligible? Like, did they get eligibility lists, or did people just like write down their nominations?
They were definitely eligible.
Yeah, it's exclusion.
Did people think that it wasn't?
Mm-hmm. It's exclusion even makes its absence is even louder, given the fact that it's pretty obvious that the reason they didn't nominate it for best score is because being the only musical in that category, as we've seen before, it's never happened where there's only one musical in the score category, but there's been times where it's been, you know, like two musicals, two plays, and they always give it to a musical. It would have defaulted to the musical. It just kind of reads like the Tony nominators didn't want to have their name on The Lightning Thief. I mean, that's pretty obvious given the fact that the two categories where we assumed it would default into a nomination, leading actor and score, they went out of their way in various ways to exclude it. In one category, actor, they, you know, reduced the nominee down to one, which is fairly unprecedented. And then in score, they nominated five non-musicals. It's pretty egregious in terms of like the messaging of it. I have no allegiance to Percy Jackson in either direction.
Yeah, me too. And it's just it reads as very strange.
Gatekeeper-y.
Yeah, we were all texting each other as it was like happening. And I was like, did I miss something that it actually wasn't eligible? Like, I was like, it had to have been like just a default nominee in like some places.
It honestly, like, having seen it, it should have shown up in score, leading actor, and lighting, because the lighting of it was very cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the kind of thing that I don't think anyone expected it to show up across the board. Like, I think we all knew they'd want to default down to three shows in a lot of these categories. But the fact that they were willing to default from it to three jukebox musicals, I honestly think makes them look bad.
Yeah.
And I will say, on Twitter today, The Lightning Thief is all I saw anyone talking about. So I think it kind of backfired on them.
So here's my theory about what may have happened. And it might be a flawed, skewed theory, but it's just, you know, hear me out here. When this show opened, it was last fall, right? It was like September or October. It was right after the prom closed, because I know it was at the same theater.
Yeah.
So it opened last fall. No sign that a pandemic was coming. We thought it would just be business as usual. And that is a show that on the surface is not something that, you know, we would look at and go, oh, that's a total Tony contender in a normal year. And I think when you talk about the gatekeeping element of it, you have this American Theater Wing and voters who go, I don't really have to, you know, see that show. I'm not really interested. It's not going to really be a Tony thing. We'll have bigger contenders down the road. So that show closes way before the pandemic, and then they assume everything else is going to come along, and it just doesn't. So I question how many people actually saw the show, if it's not something that they were, you know, maybe that intrigued to see in the first place, and then that's why it doesn't show up anywhere.
That then is up to the producers, who it's their job to invite Tony nominators. And if they didn't invite enough Tony nominators, we would have known, because that's what happened to the West Side Story revival, which did technically open, but they didn't invite enough Tony nominating committee members to be eligible. That wasn't the case with Lightning Thief. Mm-hmm. So people did see it. They just willingly chose to ignore it.
And there's also an album. Like, there's a soundtrack out there. Like,
I literally listened to it this morning.
Like, you can listen to it.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's a very good album in terms of, like, representing the show, too. I also think, for me, if I was a Tony nominator and I had passed on seeing the show and I got to the part where it says leading actor in a musical and there's only two people eligible, frankly, as a person who likes to consider themselves to be a decent human, I would have just nominated both men.
Because the first one's already there by default.
Right. Like, we all knew that Aaron Tveit was going to win this. And I honestly think that him winning as the only nominee in the category, like, that's not how I would want to win an award. Like, that kind of puts a weird damper on him winning. And B, is so disrespectful to Chris McCarroll, who also, I will say, gave one of my favorite performances of last year. That, like, I don't know, I just feel really weird about the whole thing. Although I do love the caveat that Aaron Tveit has not automatically won the award.
Right.
60% of people must vote for him. And, like, I have nothing particularly against Aaron Tveit. This is not the, like, role that I want to see him get his Tony for. Like, that role has kind of come and gone. Like, can you imagine?
It's so funny.
They're like, oh, no one wins the Tony Award for Best Actor in a Musical.
Right. It essentially becomes not who's going to win. It becomes if this one man is going to go home with the Tony Award tonight, which is odd.
So weird.
And there's precedence for having one nominee in a category. It happened back in 1995 with Sunset Boulevard. They just gave it Best Book and Best Score. But that year, there were no other nominees possible. The only other new musical was Smokey Joe's Cafe, which did not have a score or a book.
A jukebox musical that was number after
it was
number.
A review. There was not even a plot. There was no dialogue. So I don't... So there's precedence for one nominee, but this is different.
There's precedent to get rid of the category, though, because in 1985, they didn't have a Best Actress or Best Actor in a musical award because there was only one woman eligible for Best Actress. And so they decided to also do away with the Best Actor because they felt that there weren't enough people that were worthy of the nomination. But so, like...
Sorry, that's just...
I mean, yeah. I'm assuming that means that they didn't want, like, a two-person category, but, like...
New York is mean.
There is precedent to also just say, oh, there aren't enough people eligible here, so, like, we're just gonna not do it.
Right, and in that Tony Award, what happened was they shuffled the leading actors and actresses down to featured because, like, the man who played Huck Finn in Big River and the one who played Anna and the King and I Revival that year were nominated and featured, and obviously those are not featured roles. So there's precedence, again, to combine the categories. They could have done it. They just chose not to for I no reason.
There's plenty of room for Aaron Tveit in the featured category. Like, it's not like, oh, it was already too crowded. Like, I mean, I would have loved to have had them have to choose between, like, Danny Bernstein and Aaron Tveit for Moulin Rouge. But I don't know, the whole thing just rubs me totally the wrong way. Because it just seems so petty to me. And it also, I think, is very alienating to young theater fans who, in the same way that, you know, they went hard for Be More Chill last year, they went hard for Dear Evan Hansen, and that luckily paid off for them. But The Lightning Thief is the musical that young theater fans are very into, partially because, like, it has a lower production value because they purposely wanted to keep the ticket costs down so that younger people could see it. I just think it's a real shame that a lot of them, and I've already seen a lot of stuff today on Instagram and TikTok and Twitter, are feeling completely unrepresented by the Tony Awards and also now have very little interest in the Tony Awards. And as a kid who grew up with the Tony Awards being, like, my one real link to theater during the year, I think that's a real shame.
Yeah, and it's weird that this year of all years is the year they choose to be picky about who they want, you know, their eyes on the Tony Awards, when they really can't afford to be losing any sort of audience at all.
Yeah, it's, you know, an interesting thing, because, Nicole, you make a good point. I'm someone who, you know, has these... is unchecked biases in a way where I see a show like The Lightning Thief and go, yeah, it's what it is. It's just that kid thing. But I guess, you know, I don't think of it at that broader level of, oh, there really is an audience out there that cares passionately about this and doesn't see themselves represented in this theatrical community as a result. So, well,
but you know, like, they nominated the SpongeBob SquarePants musical for a lot.
Yep.
And deservedly so, because it was well done and well performed. And I mean, by all accounts, even the negative reviews of The Lightning Thief said that the lead actor was good. So I don't understand.
And it's weird to me, too, because not only were reviews good for Chris McCarroll, they were good for Kristen Stokes, who was in the lead female role. They were good for the supporting cast. So it's just very weird to me. I kind of expected them to get shuffled out of the bigger categories, but them snubbing the actors, particularly someone like, you know, Chris McCarroll was also in the Les Mis revival. Like, he has other Broadway credits to his name. Just feels so odd of a thing to do, particularly in a year like this when, you know, the Tony Awards need to be sort of a time to celebrate and to uplift and to remind people why they love theater and why we have to fight to make sure that theater remains something that can happen post-pandemic. It just feels like an unfortunate thing that has occurred.
I agree.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah, like, because at the end of the day, yes, not every single show that opens on Broadway should get nominated for a Tony. We're very well aware of that. But when we're in a situation like we are right now, where particularly in the musical category, where you're literally nominating every single person in every single musical but one out of four, is, you cannot look at that. And, you know, as Nicole said, this Tony Awards, it's not really an award show. It's really a celebration, and really is theater and New York theater and Broadway saying to the world, I am here, I'm still here, and I'm going to fight like hell to make sure that I'm here once the pandemic is over. So it really is a celebration of what theater does, not how, not who's better than who. So the fact that, you know, everything but one show was just alienated, it does leave a weird sting in my mouth.
I can honestly say it's the first year I'm not excited for the Tony Awards, just because it feels so icky to me now. And it's a time that it should have been uplifting theater and uplifting all these shows that, like we've said, The Lightning Thief isn't the only show this year that is not your typical Tony Awards show. And so, I think that it would have been a really cool opportunity to be like, let's honor all of these shows. Let's have performances from all of these shows and just acknowledge that, yeah, it's a weird year, but we're still going to make do with what we have. And that I guess, wasn't how the Tony Awards people thought. So
it's so upsetting.
Are there some things that people are excited about, though? You know, that's still, you know, the Tonys. We love Broadway.
You know, look at the list. Yeah, like, Cody has a Tony nomination.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Diablo Cody.
And, like, the possibility for Karen Olivo to become a two-time Tony winner. Mm-hmm. I'm here
for
it.
Well, that's not happening, but okay.
I am it's thrilled.
And I'm here for it.
I am so excited for Adrienne Warren to win her Tony.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
No, but honestly, I do think that, like, there are some really exciting people in here. I think it's pretty fun that we get, like, Tony Award nominee Jake Gyllenhaal. Mostly because that may not have happened in a normal year.
Three-time Tony Award nominee.
Oh, that's right. But, like, I don't think he was going to get it for this normally. I'm so thrilled. The one thing that I'm really, really happy about is Slave Play's 12 nominations.
Yeah.
Record-breaking.
Yeah.
I mean, even before the shutdown happened, it was pretty clear that it was going to come down to Slave Play versus The Inheritance in most categories. And that played out exactly as we expected.
Yeah, because The Inheritance is one behind it with 11.
Yeah.
One thing I'm excited for on Tony night, you know, we were just talking about Aaron Tveit in Best Actor. I would like to see on the telecast him show up with his Enjolras hair from Les Mis. Just to spice things up on the telecast a little bit. That would be interesting.
I hope he's not in his AirPods like he did during the Sondheim concert.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
I want him to show up with that hair. And I saw someone on Twitter suggest that, you know, he's the only nominee there. Would it have killed them to put in Raul Esparza from Company back in 2006 just to give him another shot?
One more time.
He would deserve it, honestly.
Someone said, couldn't we have just done a Tony Awards for all the other shows from the Hamilton year to let them get their due? And I was like, honestly?
Yeah.
I would have been down for that.
I would be here for awards for Waitress.
Yeah, right? We could have awarded Waitress. Could have awarded Bright Star. I'm also, one of the most exciting things for me is the fact that we have two female nominees for director of a musical, which I think is pretty exciting, and only one male nominee. I don't know if women have ever outnumbered men in that category before. So I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and something else that's exciting is that I know we're not doing predictions, but especially in, you know, not to play our hand too hard, but featured actor in a musical and leading actress in a musical, the winner, who I imagine is actually going to win, probably would win in a normal season anyway. So we were talking about, you know, defaulting in the best actor category, but there's still some excitement for some really great worthy performances that are going to get their due.
Yeah. And even in the nominees, there were people who were, you know, surprisingly shut out. Like, for example, Marissa Tomei didn't get a nomination for The Rose Tattoo.
Oh.
They definitely could have nominated the female lead in Betrayal if they wanted also. To, you know? Like, yeah, there was room to move people around, and it wasn't just defaulting in every category.
Yeah, I guess Paul Alexander Nolan didn't get in for Slave Play.
That's true.
Because that man is cursed. But
it's so weird.
I think what's interesting to me is like some of the categories, like the best actor in a leading role in a play, having how many nominees is that? Like
six.
It was six. That's what they did with best actress in a play last year.
Yeah. Which this just isn't the kind of year that I would normally expect that to happen, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good reminder of how many plays there were that did open before the shutdown.
I love seeing over and featured actress of a play, Jane Alexander and Lois Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That's really nice to see two veterans pop up there. We were talking about Jagged Little Pill, Catherine Gallagher, daughter of Peter Gallagher. Seeing her nominated, I'm sure she's very intelligent in her own. I haven't seen her in the show yet. But her father, I was thinking about him in Guys and Dolls, and it's like, okay, he did not get nominated, but she did. So she's carrying on the family legacy there at the Tonys.
She and Stephanie Stiles, who was in, why did I just blank on the name of that revival last year?
Kiss Me Kate.
Thank you, Kiss Me Kate. God, I liked that show at the time, but I guess it's completely left my memory. The two of them are very close friends, and Stephanie Stiles put up a very cute video of her reacting to Catherine getting nominated today.
Oh, that's great.
Which warmed my heart.
We love that.
What else? We already talked about Adrienne Warren. She's wonderful. Again, I keep talking about Shuffle Along. You have her and Audra nominated. Shuffle Along. Let's just bring
Where is our Shuffle Along revival, everybody?
Really. Where's our Shuffle Along recording? Let's start with that.
Seriously.
True.
Okay. Yeah, those are the big ones in acting. Laura Linney is there. I know. Nicole, you saw that in London, right? My Name is Lucy Barton.
Yeah, I saw that in London. It was fine. It was good, but it wasn't super impressive. Like, I've seen two of the nominees in the best performance by an actress in a leading role in a play category, and I definitely prefer Audra McDonald in that role, so that's my two cents there.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like she got nominated because she's Laura Linney doing a one-woman show.
I mean, yeah.
But it's not an undeserving nomination. It's just not groundbreaking or anything.
I mean, like Mary Louise Parker got nominated for The Sound Inside because she's Mary Louise Parker. Like, the reviews for that were not great.
It's tough for me to analyze some of these because normally in a regular season with no COVID and lots of shows running, I would be up in New York seeing everything I could. And these are all shows nominated that I just did not get around to before the shutdown. I would have seen some of them had we had more time, but it just did not work out that way. So here I am left, you know, trying to pull analysis based on things I've heard secondhand and from reviews and just my own research, but not actually having seen the shows.
Now you know what Cody and I are used to.
Yeah, I'm a victim to YouTube clips and Spotify soundtracks.
Yep.
It's which leads me to the next point. It's hard to like not even just predict but analyze a category like best original score, which usually you can listen to in the comfort of your home anywhere in the world. But the only score that I could find online, I did some research today, was the score to The Inheritance. The other four nominees I'm having trouble finding, so if anybody has them or a link or something, please share them with us because we'd love to know what they're gonna award.
The music in The Inheritance is very nice.
Yeah, that's how I feel about most play music. It's nice.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to have to, like, comb through reviews to be like, okay, which of these plays, like, had the score mentioned in their review?
Like,
probably not.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if there's any one of them where people actually talked about it in the reviews, then I'm like, well, maybe that's the one. Like, maybe that's the score that people would remember whenever they go to vote.
Yeah.
Either that or I honestly think, like, it will probably go to, like, The Inheritance or Slave Play just because those are the big, I was going to say the big winners, but, you know, in terms of nominations.
They're the two that are duking it out.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I think we can kind of assume that one of the two will take a lot of the awards.
I hear this reaction, and I think scores, beautiful scores.
Great scores, beautiful scores.
Scores, beautiful scores, yeah.
That's why I walk out of a play talking about is the score.
I'm very confused by this A Christmas Carol that keeps showing up on the play side. I do not remember that happening.
Oh, what Christmas Carol is it?
That was actually a big deal last fall. That was with Andrea Martin, and it was this
remember this.
It was there. It was a limited run. It was only about, I want to say, 2.5-3 months, but it was very well reviewed. I was actually going to try to see it, but it was such a short run, I just couldn't make it back in time. It was smaller cast. It was done, how do I explain? Not like, you know, some rugged style, but it was, you know, not a big grand, you know, Broadway production. It was on Broadway, obviously, but it was done, you know, on a different scale.
Minimalistically.
Minimalistic,
was Lashawn's yeah. enough?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, and I believe it was a play with music, you know, that kind of odd term.
Yeah.
So I think it actually would probably be the closest to a musical of the nominees, which would lead me to believe, like, maybe that'll win. But again, it closed almost a year ago, so who knows?
Yeah, a year.
So, and, like, how do you have A Christmas Carol and not nominate the person playing
Scrooge
as for a leading actor? Like, I feel like that's such a baity gimme thing.
Like, yeah, it just got Kraft nominations.
Yeah,
so this was the show that opened November 20th and closed January 5th. It was a very short run at the Lyceum, and Campbell Scott as Ebenezer Scrooge, Lashawn's as the Ghost of Christmas Present, Andrew Martin as the Ghost of Christmas Past. I remember it being very well received. So, you know, to get some tech nominations, I guess, is a nice thing there.
I think it's also weird to me because in London, there's always like three or four productions of A Christmas Carol, like every year. And they never get nominated for Olivier's because they're not really seen as that sort of show. So, like, I truly saw it and I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you can nominate A Christmas Carol for things, huh?
And the composer who was nominated for it, I believe, wrote the Lord of the Rings musical. So he has a background in musical theater. Let me just double check on that. Yeah, he did additional music for Matilda. So he, you know, is somebody in the musical theater world. I don't honestly know the background of the other composer, so I can't say if that's the case for them. But they're not names I recognize, so who knows?
If this is the same guy, I just looked him up, Christopher Nightingale, and he, yeah, has credits on IMDb in the music department, additional music composer, and a lot of big blockbusters from recent years. A Quiet Place, Black Panther, Spider-Man Homecoming, Doctor Strange, The Nice Guys, Baywatch.
Good for him.
Most importantly, he did the music for the film Pride.
Oh, I knew it. Somewhere that makes sense.
Yeah,
here it is. He did the soundtrack and he was the composer for Pride. That was at the very bottom on IMDb.
Oh, and this is not his first Tony nomination. He was nominated for the Matilda orchestrations.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Good for you, Christopher Nightingale.
We love you, Christopher Nightingale.
I guess we didn't get a orchestrations. Oh, no, we did. Okay.
No,
they just did. It's
no,
the same three musicals.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's another
new
nomination.
Best original score category this year. Since that's where all the musicals are.
Right. It's basically how you like rescored every, you know, Tina Turner, Alanis Morissette, or every other song in history, Moulin Rouge.
I feel like looking
at Firework. It needs a nomination.
I mean, seriously.
Oh my God.
Looking at what we were just looking at with Christopher Nightingale, I feel like it's the scene from Mean Girls. Good for you, Christopher. You go, Christopher. And none for Percy Jackson.
It's truly. It's like, oh, they remembered this production of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
That's so mean.
It really does feel like they had like six shows they could nominate and they were like, shit, did anybody see that Christmas Carol? It had music, right? Okay, fine, nominate it. Not Lightning Thief.
Anything else before we close this out, or are those just our initial thoughts and then we'll return when we predict nominations eventually?
Yeah, that's all I got. Weird year.
I'm kind of excited that never mind. I lied. I was going to say I was kind of excited that Tracy Letts is still a Tony nominee this year, even though the minutes didn't open. But Linda Vista wasn't nominated for Best Play, so whoops.
One quick thing I did want to say is, what kind of format do you guys think this is going to look like?
I think that set the template, and since it worked so well, I can't imagine them doing anything differently for the Tonys or the Oscars. Frankly, I just don't know if they will still have performances like live.
I think you gotta. I mean, like, what the hell is the Tonys without singing? You know, like, it'll be weird as hell. But I think you gotta do even just like a floating head in their apartment singing a song from Tina. You know, it's
be getting a bunch of Alanis Morissette. We're gonna have like four Alanis Morissette numbers of people in their apartments.
I'm just kind of like, are they going to use record it, like stuff from recordings of the shows, or are they actually going to do something live? That's what.
Oh, I think they would do something live, and I think there's a way to do that. If maybe everyone quarantines first, and then they find a socially distanced way to do it in some theater. You know, it's been done before.
Yeah, have them all go to the Shakespeare in the Park Theater and just sing 6 feet apart. It's possible.
That's the Delacorte.
Or the Park Avenue Armory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So weird.
I think that's one of the most interesting things this year, though, is just to see what is it going to look like?
Yeah.
This is the perfect combination for those of us, the Lovely fans out there, to combine Alanis Morissette and Broadway. She could perform her hit single from the Lovely.
God.
Yeah, so all negative four of you the Lovely fans out there, because Michael Schwartz is already on the podcast, let us know.
Look, the Lovely is delightful, okay?
Delightful is delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious.
Oh, God.
It is.
I think we're getting a little delirious. Oh, so, all right. What else do we have to say about these Tony Awards? Anything before we put it to bed for, I don't even want to say a month or so, because we don't know when these things are going to happen. They could be like next spring for all I know.
That's my last thing, is just please someone give us a date. Like, I know that now that we have nominations, I can believe that they're actually happening, but I feel like I can't really believe it until I know what day they're happening.
Yeah, you know, I really thought James Monroe Oglehart was going to tell us in the announcement. Same. And he's like, we will see you all soon. And I'm like, what?
It's like all of the trailers right now that just say coming soon at the end. And we're like, what does that mean, guys? What does it mean?
Yeah, so my thought is that it'll be before the end of the calendar year. I have no, you know, information to base that on, but I just can imagine them extending this, you know, into January or February if they announce them in October.
Yeah. I mean, if they keep the kind of schedule that they told us about the nominations on, they could 1 week just be like, by the way, Tony's next week.
Be there, be square.
So I guess we better like start getting ready with our predictions in case we have to do our predictions episode last minute.
It's like we're doing a summer stock of the Tony seasons. We're just going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have died if he was like, tune in next week. Like, I
that would have been amazing. I would have stand that, honestly.
Same.
Like, only the Tonys could get away with that.
I would have loved when they were announcing the nominees for Best Musical. They could have been Jagged Little Pill, Moulin Rouge, Tina, and Take Me to the World, a Sondheim 90th celebration.
Oh, man.
I can't.
Oh, Lord.
So, all right. Well, I think that does it here. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Stay tuned for our next episode. We're going to be doing an episode next month, obviously, but I don't know if this is going to be Tony-based or not. It all depends on when we get a date finalized. But we will certainly be back for more Tony talk to make our final predictions before the ceremony. For now, though, Nicole, where can our listeners find you on Twitter?
You can find me at NicoleAckman16. Anyone listening who's also sad about Percy Jackson, please come and talk to me.
Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at DancinDanOnFilm.
Cody?
I'm on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Instagram at CodyMonster91.
Casey?
You can find me on Twitter at Casey Lee Clark.
And Lauren.
You guys can find me on the Twitter at Lauren Lamango.
Once again, I'm Michael Schwartz. You can find me on Twitter at mschwartz95. Thank you for being a Patreon subscriber. You can find additional Next Best Picture and Next Best Theater content on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and Spotify. Thanks again for listening. We will see you all next time. And please, please, please vote. Thank you. Okay, if that happens again, I don't even know what we're going to do.
Call her Miss Clark.
Yeah. Bluetooth is weird. Technology is weird. I don't get it.
Nicole, are we ready to try again?
I'm just still recording.
Okay, perfect.
I'm at.
Let me try again.
I just started recording again because I decided, you know what? Fuck that.
Okay.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.